Well, good afternoon, everybody. Coming up next on KPTZ is Brewocracy Now, our weekly chat with Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow, today joined by Tyler Johnson from Port Townsend Public Works. So plenty to talk about here, and the way that you can join in is to go to the kptz.org website, click right at the top on Brewocracy Now. It'll say join Zoom meeting. You can do it that way, or you can simply send me your questions, dj@kptz.org. We are in the middle of, I'm not in the middle. We're actually at the tail end of our fundraiser. So don't forget, this type of programming, everything costs a bit. And this is a great time to, while you're on that website, to click donate now and keep this type of unique programming alive in Port Townsend. So as I bring this down, I'm going to say hello to our guests today, John Morrow and Tyler Johnson. Hello, guys, are you there?
We are. Hey, Tim, how are
you? Hi. Oh, I'm about to turn Sergio Mendez off and Brazil 66, which is, I'm pretty sure you were not alive in 1966, so.
I can confirm that.
Yes. Well, someday we're going to talk about what's on your playlist, John. Someday when we have time. Just for fun. Who is our guest today, John, and what are we talking about?
Well, this is a pretty big week for us that's often not really recognized or celebrated, and that's National Public Works Week. And if anybody was paying attention to the city council meeting on Monday, boy, we went through it all. You know, we hit stormwater, streetlights, transportation, you name it. And a lot of that is the ecosystem on which we all depend. The city provides a whole raft of services and infrastructure. And this week's a really good chance for us to both celebrate. We really do have an excellent team here. I mean, you know, commanded by Steve King, who's been on the show, but, people have commented to me about how grateful they are that we've got such, really hardworking, dedicated public works staff. So this week is a chance, especially more than normal, to thank them when you see them on the roads, the streets, on the sidewalks, wherever they are. But it's also a chance for us, I think, in the show to dig into one or two of those specific projects. And Tyler's kind of across it all, so maybe I'll let him introduce himself here. But one of the things he's been stewarding for us has been the LED streetlight program that came to council just recently. So we can range far and wide. We can go to Discovery Road because we had a recent design decision on that from council this week. We can go to stormwater. We can go to engineering and GIS because Tyler's our GIS whiz. Hey, welcome, Tyler.
Thank you. Thank you, John. I guess I'll just introduce myself real quick. I started working here at the city in June of 1997. Within a week of graduating college, I was an intern and I was out GPSing manholes and water valves and hydrants. And within 2 years, I was able to, get the GIS coordinator position. That's my main job. And I've been here ever since, 24 years. And the great thing about it is I'm in the engineering department. I get to do a lot of really fun things, get to be part of building projects as well as road projects. A streetlight project just came up in January, and so that's why I'm here.
And I have to say, it's a shame, Tim, that this is not a visual program, although I love the radio. Because not only does Tyler wear his 24 years with the city very well, the visual data that he's able to showcase, including, a map of streetlights or whatever city infrastructure, is truly astounding. And, one of the things we did was that a couple months ago, Tyler took us through a look at our water infrastructure with a real focus on Tyler, you might want to say a few words about what you accomplished with the team to map that whole thing out.
Yeah, that was a big project to map the main transmission water line all the way from the Big Quill all the way into Port Townsend. And it took both me, an engineer in the office, Brandon, and the mill team to find all the air valves, all the air releases, all the infrastructure along the route, try to find it and then map it and get it into a GIS so we can do some asset mapping, asset management, and continue with that project with the consultant.
Well, you know, that's a fascinating job, doing GIS, and especially in a town this old with this much history, that must be challenging at times.
It is challenging. Like, and the thing is, the job never goes away. If I walk, I usually walk wherever I go, and I'm looking down, and it's like, that patch right there, I bet you that's the service line, or I bet you this is mapped wrong. And then I'll run back the next day and try to fix it, so or get the old as-built out of the archives. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Tyler, you just described this recently at a city council meeting, but I love the legwork on every individual streetlight, public streetlight. Maybe you could tell listeners about that project a little bit and how you got up close and personal with pretty much every single light in the city.
Yeah, definitely. I visited every one of the 650 lights in town, and it took most of January and February to do that. I was doing it at night. And at first I thought this is going to be an easy project. I'm just going to go out, collect some data, compare it to what we have from the PUD who owns the lights, and it'll be easy. But then after a while, it's like, well, we should probably be keeping track of all the lights that have shields on them, the ones that have pollution, light pollution going on to the neighbors' homes, or the ones that are too tall, or the lights that aren't needed most likely because there's a bunch of lights on commercial buildings nearby. And then at the same time, over the last several years, the PUD has been installing different LED lights. And so we try to keep track of which ones we kind of liked better, the ones that have really harsh glare or the color made it difficult to see. So, you know, that was a big project, just finding them. And then I think one of the big things is that kind of pushed this project in January was the fact that we're looking for a way to save one of the ways is looking for a way to save money in the street budget. Right now we spend $145,000 on streetlights, which is 16% of the street budget altogether. So if there's a way we can possibly eliminate lights or eliminate duplicate lights, you know, change what we're doing, that was part of the process also to, you know, verify our bill with the PUD. Fortunately, there was a lot of good folks like Steve and others here in the office, and they were able to renegotiate the rate that we pay for LED lights. There were several things going on. We're looking at a grant to change all the lights to LED, and then we were able to negotiate a rate because we pay for the street lights as a flat rate, which includes all the electricity and includes all the maintenance. The current lights that everybody's used to, the high pressure sodium lights, are very maintenance intensive. The bulbs go out, the light sensors go out, the ballast goes out. One other thing I can't remember. And so we were able to negotiate a rate from $17.25 a light per month down to $9.81 if and when we convert to LED, which will save us about $30,000 a year. So that was one of the reasons why we started this project, in addition to the environmental reasons, looking at how much energy we're using with the hunt. Most of the lights that you see in town are 100 watt lights. And with LED, we can get down, and especially in the residential neighborhoods, down to 15 or even less watts per light. And so the survey itself was a really good project. And also talking to neighbors who, it's amazing. It's a really tough one. Like, I even look at my own house. It's like, I like the light when I need it, but the rest of the time I don't want it there. And so this project is just super challenging, trying to balance the costs, trying to balance the environmental aspects, the light pollution, dark skies initiative, and of course safety. Why the lights there in the first place? The safety of pedestrians, and also if we bring in a bunch of really blue lights, are we going to affect the safety of wildlife and ourselves with the blue light. So I've learned a lot. This is a tough one.
This is a tough one. And you know, it never occurred to me because I'm not one to go out and look at 650 lights at night. I don't think most of us are, that there isn't really a standard. And lights are important. And how do you gather the input? I mean, you have the economic consideration, but you also have, as you said, the safety. How do you tell, what is the objective of the survey that you're doing? What would you like to see come out of it? And this is for either of you.
Go ahead, Tyler.
Okay. Well, the survey that I did was the field work. I used an app on my phone and I collected all the data and I matched it up with what the county had. But we also we're collecting information on our Engage PT through our Engage PT website from citizens. And I can also look back at all the citizen concerns that we've gotten over the years for lights, for requests for shields on lights where there's light pollution onto the adjacent homes. So we have a lot of that information, or even requests for more lights if there's a neighborhood that's dark and people are interested. But I think at least within the last few weeks, the main way we're collecting data is through the website and requesting information from the public on their thoughts on, and there's a lot of very smart people that know lights really well in this community. So we're very fortunate.
This community seems to speak Kelvin, which I guess is the temperature used to quantify the brightness of the light or the tone, I guess. And it's been great to get so many public comments about this at City Council. And I think for me, it's a real microcosm of what I hope all issues are, which, we can't get the whole comprehensive, package of information out to everybody. So people come in with questions saying, gosh, does this switch to LED mean that we're going to lose lights on Sims Way? And that just seems preposterous, or whatever the word was in one of the comments that was made. And it's like, nope, that's actually not part of the picture here. So good, we can kind of shelve that concern because it's not actually something that's going to happen. We've got people who say, I want it dark and really dark because that's why I live here. Great. That's, part of what we're trying to navigate here is how to reduce light pollution and provide, great views of the night sky. I personally enjoy that quite a bit. And then we're hearing some people say, look, the lights actually might be the wrong Kelvin, kind of the wrong tone, a lot, fiercer and colder light than a warm light. So they have grave concerns about that because LEDs are so hyper efficient and so powerful. And again, we're trying to dim that as well, but kind of dial it up and dial it down to get the right outcome. And I think just like any decision, we're not going to get 100%, uniform happiness across the entire community. But if we listen to what people have to say and we are creative in balancing these things together, it's my belief we can get to quite a lot of contentment with the final outcome.
And you brought up a good point when it comes to the public comment in this town. I'm never underestimate people living in port towns and then the background knowledge that they have. So I do want to put this out there again. Those comments can be collected at Engage PT on the internet. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So if you have thoughts, because everybody has a thought about lights. Nobody thinks about lights until I fall in that category of liking dark skies. And but there are other facets to this, and Engage PT is the place to make your opinions known on this. And after this information is gathered, how long do you see this process taking?
Well, we've already kind of looked at a fixture that we're kind of thinking about going with. And so since we've been doing this since January, we've been working with the PUD to try to test out some different lights at night. So I met out in the field several times with the city engineer, Dave Peterson, and then also most recently with Dave and Steve King with the PUD to try to evaluate some of the lights that we were looking at. And the light that we've honed in on, there's actually a good example in town. If anybody wants to drive by it's probably going to be like after 10 o'clock or so at night, but the corner of Harrison and Blaine, which is just up from the fire hall, right next to the Catholic Church, the PUD put in a light similar to the same brand and everything the same is what we're hoping to get with the grant. But it's actually a 70 watt and we're looking at a 40. So it's a brighter light. It's turned all the way down. And so if you go up there, you can see about the intensity of light in a residential area. You can see kind of that warm yellow color. It's the warmest that is made by that company. It's 2,700 Kelvin. And the fixture is actually approved by the International Dark Sky Association. So it has zero light going up to the sky and it is a full cutoff fixture. So there's no light above horizontal from the side view. So it's a really good example of, you know, what we're looking at. And one of the advantages of this light is that we can adjust it up and down. We're not going to want to do this regularly with 650 lights, but if we can kind of hone in on an appropriate light level for a residential area, we have that ability to turn it down. And if the council decided, we have the option of being able to have it curfew and turn off or turn to even a lower light level at some period at night or after 10 o'clock or any time that we choose in the middle of the night, it could be less. So that it gives us some options. And while you're there at Harrison and Blaine, if you go down to the right, down the Blaine Street neighborhood, mid-block, there's two lights. There's the traditional 100-watt high-pressure sodium light, and there's also one of the newer lights that we're proposing. And you can take a look, see what you think.
Well, you just answered my next question. Can people look at the alternatives? And so if you are in the vicinity of Harrison and Blaine and you see people standing around looking up at lights, they may be listeners to Brewocracy Now. Say hi. Interesting topic. And all of these things that you do, well, you know, when you started 24 years ago mapping manhole covers, did you think you would be 24 years later doing lights?
No, definitely not. It was always our own utilities, water, sewer, stormwater, and streets back then. So definitely not lights.
So John Morrow, you have people on your staff doing this work that that tends to happen in the background. We don't always hear about it. They just magically things happen in this city, and this has been a good way to advise people of what's coming up. You know, it occurred to me recently, you have Tyler Johnson here. He's been here for 24 years. I just took a trip down the West Coast, and I saw hiring wanted signs all over, everywhere. How's it going in the city?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think, you know, this is a dialogue that's at least national, you know, and I've been hearing quite a lot of struggle, no matter what the industry and the location around the country with getting qualified staff. So, you know, what better way than, you know, Public Works Week to celebrate the folks who have actually dedicated 24 years of service to the city and this community like Tyler? We want them to stick around because, you know, if Tyler would walk out the door, that institutional knowledge would walk with him. And, you know, that's part of what makes this community really special. And I think living and working in a city that has such talent is that people have been here for a long time and that benefits everybody. So, yeah, we at one point only a couple months ago had 20 vacancies still. And had a really hard time, you know, getting seasonal workers. You know, we just kind of ginned up a training for lifeguards that I think is happening. If it wasn't yesterday, it's today, to certify lifeguards because we need lifeguards so we could open up more hours and capacity at the pool. You know, we've had a code compliance officer position open for a while. You know, we just filled our police chief role, but there's a number of patrol officer roles that we're trying to fill. That's been actually a challenge for us for at least the last 5 years. So it's not like a new COVID thing, but it's made it harder. So, you know, our little community at the end of the peninsula, really needs to work hard to attract and retain great talent. You know, I could just say, honestly, it's a struggle, because housing affordability is a huge issue here, and cost of living, and even just, you know, the inventory, you know, finding a house that's for sale is a challenge, even if you have $1 million, you know? And then, you know, the second is, you know, it's a challenge because I think people are, kind of contemplating their next steps. And some of the articles and podcasts and whatnot that I've listened to recently is that it's a real transition time for a lot of people around the country about what they want to do. And there's additional pressures at the home with families, and particularly for women, and particularly for women of color. So a lot of folks who are in the service industry are really struggling. So I think the city's not alone, but we certainly have some challenges that are specific to our location, our cost of living, And frankly, I think our standards, because, you know, we really want to hire excellent talent, and, you know, we're not going to settle, really. We're going to really aim high.
Well, and getting excellent talent is so much tied to having housing stock.
Yeah.
I imagine that's an issue. And I, even with the city, these are decent jobs. They're the kind of jobs that one would think would go higher on the totem pole than perhaps working in the service industry. And I can't imagine the challenges that they are having, but for the same reasons of people being able to afford to live here. Again, you mentioned women and the childcare issues that have often fallen on the shoulders of women. Mm-hmm. I know,
not universally, obviously, but I think there is it's very gendered. So disproportionately, they carry
disproportionately.
The burden.
Yes, I think that's the word to use on that. I know we're limited in what we can do as a municipality. I'm looking for a silver lining. I'm looking for a light at the end of the tunnel. Do you have anything to say about that?
Sure. I mean, I don't want to paint a rosy picture, because the reality is we're in a housing, we've got a housing crisis, affordability crisis, availability crisis, and homelessness crisis. And COVID has not made it any better. In fact, it's very likely exacerbated that crisis. So, you know, I could say that this, I don't want to say silver lining, but the city does play a role. I mean, we aren't housing providers, and we don't construct houses for people. But infrastructure provision is one of those things. And so, you know, like our success with the state capital budget and the awesome leadership of some of our state delegation, we've been able to secure $3.1 million in funding for affordable housing to build the infrastructure to support affordable housing. So, you know, water, sewer, utility, you know, that's where the city plays a direct role. And then, of course, in the land use and permitting side of things, there are a number of projects that we have, you know, in various stages right now. You know, and one of them that I get really excited about is where we got a little creative and did something we haven't done as a city before, and you know, drew up a private partnership with a housing developer to tap into our regional stormwater system, and actually make it bigger, you know, to take some of their stormwater load. So that allows them to build more units and maximize their use of the site. So, you know, that was a contribution they made to the city at about almost $500,000. That's a pretty firm commitment that they're interested in actually building out that site. And if so, it'll be well over 100 multifamily units. So this stuff takes time. It's got to go through a long process, but there are a number of these things at various stages. And it's my hope when we have this conversation in 3 or 4 years, the scene's going to look a little different.
And I hope it does. I hope it does for everybody's sake. And this is Public Works Week. And as you know, I'm a big fan of indoor plumbing, and so that's it's been at the top of my list for all of my adult life. I since we're getting close to the end of bureaucracy now, I want to throw one thing out. Tonight you have an intergovernmental collaborative group meeting.
Yes.
Do you have any idea of what's on that agenda tonight?
I do have some idea of the agenda. You can tune in again to hear me talk a little bit. I think I'm going to introduce the topic, one of the topics on the agenda. It's chaired by Mayor Sandoval, and it will have Port PUD city and county elected officials there, all 16 of them. And the main focus of the evening is an economic development framework. So it's really poignant, Tim, because it's one of the aspects of how we prosper as a community fairly and for everybody over the long term does involve housing and housing affordability and things like childcare. So we'll kind of unpack what that larger picture looks like. And, you know, the idea is we're setting a table for all of us to really work together to get there. We enjoy a great partnership with Port PUD and County at the moment, but to really dive into our financial and economic future together, I think, is really the aim of this evening's conversation.
Well, that sounds interesting, John Morrow. John Morrow,
5 to 7. You could listen here, I think. If not, it's live streaming from the county website.
And you know, I don't have my schedule in front of me, so I can't give a definitive answer. And every time I guess, I'm wrong at this. So, but you can tune in just like you can tune into Bureaucracy Now. You can live stream that meeting, and if you really want to be involved with what's happening locally, that's the way to do it. We're at the end of our time, John and Tyler. It's a big subject. There's so much to talk about when it comes to public works and the tendrils that it puts out to all the other hot button issues such as housing affordability. And some point we'll dig much deeper into that. But thank you, John, for being on this hot seat. It actually takes quite a bit of courage to do this in real time, and there are some, I think, contentious issues that will be brought up before we know it.
And I look forward to that, and you know I'm always up for it. And a huge thanks. I mean, Tyler also coming on this show for the first time, and all the service he's provided the city. I mean, there are dozens of staff in public works like Tyler who have been here for decades, making things happen behind the scenes. So really, I have nothing but appreciation for that team.
And thank you so much, Tyler. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim, so much. Thank you, John.
Until next week, this has been Bureaucracy Now on KPTZ, where you have a chance to interact with the people that make things happen in Port Townsend. Take advantage of that. Write it on your calendar for next week. Thanks, you guys.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you.